When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Last month, during the Super Bowl, the Biden campaign joined TikTok. And it sure seemed like the president liked posting.
Chiefs or Niners?
Two great quarterbacks. Hard to decide. But if I didn't say I was for the Eagles, and I'd be sleeping alone. My wife's a Philly girl.
Deviously plotting to rig the season so the Chiefs would make the Super Bowl, or the Chiefs just being a good football team?
You'd get in trouble if I told you.
Trump or Biden?
Are you kidding? Biden.
The campaign has been using the platform to post memes and raise awareness for Biden's re-election bid. Makes sense. TikTok's popularity among Americans has been growing faster than any other platform, according to Pew Research. But there's a tension here. TikTok has long been targeted by lawmakers, dating back to 2019 when then-President Donald Trump tried to force a sale of the platform due to its connections to the Chinese government. And since then, the threat of a TikTok ban in the U.S. lingered. In fact, almost exactly a year ago, lawmakers were grilling TikTok CEO Shouzi Chu about the app's ties to China.
ByteDance owns TikTok. If ByteDance is and the CCP owns ByteDance because the CCP owns everybody in China. By law, they can make them do whatever they want, and they say that by law, you can't tell anyone about it. So they can make you hand over that data. Is that correct?
Data is stored here in American soil by an American company overseen by America.
We thought that, but leaked audio from 80 internal TikTok meetings shows that U.S. user data has been repeatedly accessed from China when you said it hasn't been.
Then, after the hearing, nothing happened. TikTok continued to operate in the country, and negotiations between the platform and the government appeared to stall out. It looked like the app was here to stay. But earlier this month, seemingly out of nowhere, lawmakers in the House introduced a bill that would kill the app in the U.S. White House aides even helped craft the legislation. The bill sailed out of committee unanimously. The House rushed to bring it to a vote, and in a rare display of bipartisanship, they overwhelmingly voted to pass the bill on to the Senate.
And why is it essential for Congress to do this? Because the PRC controls ByteDance.
This is a common sense measure to protect our national security.
This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner.
There's been attempts at banning TikTok before. What's different this time?
I don't know if anything's different this time.
That's Emily Baker White, a senior writer at Forbes. She's been covering the platform for years.
The sort of fundamental reasons that the Trump administration gave for wanting to ban TikTok are the same reasons that the Biden administration is now supportive of a ban on TikTok if divestment is impossible.
According to a Wall Street Journal report, when the Biden campaign joined TikTok, executives inside the social media company took it as a sign that things were going well for them in the U.S. But the fast pace that this bill moved blindsided the company and just about everyone else.
Given the concern from the administration and given the concern from members of both parties on the Hill, I can see how this came together. But it came together very quickly and very quietly. And so, did I know it was going to happen this way this week? No.
So today on the show, almost a year since the last calls for a ban, TikTok is under fire again. Is it about to go up in flames? I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
And it would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
The bill that passed in the House doesn't automatically call for a ban on TikTok. What it requires is that ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns the platform, divest TikTok into American hands within 6 months of the legislation passing, or face a ban. The thing is, divestment is unlikely.
The actual likelihood of ByteDance being able to divest from TikTok is uncertain at best. There are a number of things that could stop ByteDance from doing that. First of all, they could decide they don't want to, and instead they want to fight the potential ban in court. But it's also not clear that they would find a buyer. TikTok is an extremely expensive asset, much more expensive likely than it was a few years ago when President Trump tried to force a sale with the threat of a ban after it. So whether they could get a suitable buyer is one question, but perhaps a bigger question is that the Chinese government has control over whether a sale happens too. Last time there was an attempt at a sale, the Chinese government at the last minute changed their export regulations, and they changed them so that recommendations algorithms, if you wanted to sell them, you would have to get certain licenses and permits to do so. And that was sort of the Chinese government saying, hey, we get a vote here too, potentially a veto vote. And so whether the Chinese government would even allow ByteDance to sell TikTok, even if ByteDance wanted to, is not something we have a lot of clarity on.
This legislation just seemed to happen so fast. Even TikTok, according to the Wall Street Journal, was blindsided by this. They when they saw Biden join the platform, they were like, oh, things are going great for us. And then all of a sudden, wham, this happened.
My understanding is that there were pretty intense negotiations, intense and quiet negotiations on the Hill for weeks and maybe even months before the introduction of this bill. But it surprised everybody. And even hearing those rumblings, I didn't realize the force that the bill would have when it was introduced.
Around this time last year, TikTok was deep in negotiations with CFIUS. That's the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. These discussions were supposed to help TikTok remain operational in the U.S. by distancing itself from ByteDance. They'd been negotiating since 2019, but talks hadn't gone anywhere, largely because TikTok had become so large that it's difficult to untangle all the interconnected parts that make it work.
TikTok was built as one of many apps that ByteDance has made. And ByteDance's apps, generally speaking, have been interconnected. They all use the same internal data analytics tools and, you know, style tools. And like, I worked in big tech years before I became a reporter. And like, if you've worked in one of these companies, you know that there are like 50 internal tools that you have to use. All of those internal tools, there's nothing nefarious about that. It's just the way that these enormous apps run. All those internal tools were interconnected with a bunch of other ByteDance tools. I was talking a few years back to Brian Stelter at CNN, and he said, it sounds like it's like untangling a bowl of spaghetti. And I love that analogy. That's exactly what it's like. They had to untangle a giant bowl of angel hair spaghetti in order to separate TikTok from the rest of ByteDance.
ByteDance did make an effort to appease the US government. It was called Project Texas. The company said it would essentially give the US government an unprecedented amount of control over TikTok. The platform wouldn't be able to make content policy changes without US approval. And the government could come in and view TikTok's records at any time. Still, it wasn't enough.
The government decided that they could not come to an agreement to let TikTok and ByteDance do Project Texas so long as ByteDance owned TikTok. At the end of the day, what they were trying to do is separate the idea of ownership from the idea of control. And in like corporate law, ownership and control, for the most part, are something that we talk about together.
Yeah.
And TikTok and ByteDance wanted to divorce those concepts. Yes, ByteDance would own TikTok. It would have certain control over certain things, but TikTok would also be separate. TikTok's US officers would have owed a fiduciary duty to the interests of the United States, as defined by whom? Well, the executive branch, which, imagine another Trump presidency. That gets really messy really fast, right? But like, all of that kind of conversation was happening in the CFIUS negotiation. And again, would have been really legally complex. But at the end of the day, even all that wasn't enough.
I've read a lot of people saying, you know, there's no precedent for this, but there kind of is a precedent for this, and that's Grindr. Grindr's Chinese owner was forced to sell the company because of a CFIUS review, I believe they said. We don't want a Chinese company having control over this really personal, private information. It sounds like a familiar thing.
That is probably the best precedent that we have for this. I think the big difference here is TikTok's size and TikTok's sort of unique role in the distribution of information, which I think may change the speech calculations a little bit here. There are so many people using TikTok to express so much political, civic, sort of core cultural commentary that banning it would really change the information landscape in a way that really I can like name on one hand, maybe two hands, count on one or two hands the number of other companies that have that much of a role in our information distribution system. And of course, the people who want to ban TikTok say that is a big part of the problem, right? They say the bigger it is, the more dangerous it is. The people who don't want to ban TikTok will say it is so disruptive of our speech ecosystem that without an absolute smoking gun of, you know, a grand conspiracy, you simply could not do this. It would be totally unreasonable. And so, again, it all comes back to TikTok's size and just the power the platform has over our culture and discourse and commerce.
When this legislation started moving, TikTok quickly went on the offensive, you know, sent users this message asking them to call Congress and tell them not to ban the app. And the message, I mean, it was like you could press a button and call your congressperson. That's pretty intense. It seems like a demonstration of exactly what lawmakers are worried about, in a sense.
TikTok will tell you, and they defended this campaign passionately. They said, why are you so worried about hearing from your constituents, right? Your constituents care a lot about this. What it did was show the political power of the app. And we often don't think about our Instagram, our YouTube, our TikTok, whatever, as an engine of politics. But at least when it came to whether TikTok should be banned or not, TikTok came out and showed that it could be an engine of politics. And any of these mega platforms can be engines of politics in that way.
Is TikTok really a security threat? I remember a story about Uber years ago, and the same thing happened. And, you know, Uber is an American company. What do we know here?
Any company of TikTok size, TikTok, Meta, YouTube, et cetera, these companies have so much power and control over what we see that governments are going to try to manipulate people through them. We've seen this obviously on Facebook in the 2016 election, the Russian election interference attempts. We've seen similar things on Twitter to Saudi agents actually got inside Twitter and turned over information to the Saudi government that actually led to dissidents being imprisoned and killed. And so there is a very real threat that governments will try to infiltrate these platforms and use them for bad purposes. That is the fear with TikTok and ByteDance. And I do think there's a difference between that threat when applied to TikTok and ByteDance than there is with that threat applied to the US companies because of the extent to which the Chinese government has control over or has tried to assert control over private companies in China. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a real difference. But there isn't any indication that there's a grand plot inside the C-suite at TikTok or ByteDance to try to manipulate the US population. That just hasn't been shown. And so I think the threat can be really real. And by the way, there doesn't have to be a plot in the C-suite. There can be, like there were at Twitter, a few people who gain access to things and that can still cause harm.
Yeah.
And so I think like some people think it's all a grand conspiracy and they're all in cahoots to serve the interests of the CCP. I don't think there's any evidence to show that. But I do think the simple scale and power of these mega platforms, of these tech giants, is big enough that the threat is real that they will be used in ways that will harm us.
When we come back, what's the political fallout of a TikTok ban?
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
So speaking of people that don't want to ban TikTok, we have to mention former President Trump. He supported the ban back in 2020, and now he's out there. He's done this 180. He says if you get rid of TikTok, you're only going to strengthen Meta, Facebook. And he calls Facebook, quote, the enemy of the people. Okay. But why the sudden 180?
I certainly think the 180 does raise questions about how sincere he was about what he thought were national security risks in 2020. Certainly a fair question to ask why you thought this was so pressing then and not now. It's an election year, and President Biden has come out in support of this bill, which will probably alienate some young voters. It seems very plausible to me that former President Trump thinks he might gain some of those voters if he comes out and opposes this. Former President Trump also met with a prominent Republican donor named Jeff Yass recently. Yass is an early TikTok investor. He is one of the most important TikTok investors in the United States. Trump could be trying to curry favor with him by taking this position and maybe hopefully getting some donations from him. So those are both things that folks have talked about. Trump is a really chaotic figure. He does things that people find hard to understand. I think he's playing a little electoral politics here, but the sincerity of his position is harder to understand when you look at the law.
If this bill gets through the Senate, big question mark, we don't know. But if it does and Biden signs it, he would be essentially killing a platform that he himself is using in an election year, particularly important to younger people, younger voters. Some people are calling this like political suicide, basically. I mean, is this a big deal for younger voters? Could it really have any kind of impact on the election?
Polling shows that it is a big deal for younger voters. I hesitate to put younger voters in a single category. I think Sure. some of them would care a lot and some of them wouldn't care at all. And some of them probably support a ban on TikTok. But I think, I do think it's a major electoral issue. I also think the president and Congress, they don't take these positions in an election year if they haven't thought about the electoral politics of it. So somebody somewhere has convinced the people who voted yes and the president that this is not political suicide. And there's polling that show that, you know, a lot of people also support a ban on TikTok. And so I'm skeptical that any lawmaker running for re-election is going to take a vote at this time in the cycle that they think is political suicide.
The bill sailed through the House with overwhelming support, but it still has an uphill battle in the Senate. Already, senators are expressing concerns.
My understanding is that Chuck Schumer has not yet committed to bringing this bill to the floor. And so there's a question of whether the Senate will even vote on it. I know that Marco Rubio and Mark Warner, who are prominent leaders, little bipartisan pairing there, do want to try to move this thing forward. But I've heard a lot of senators say they're unsure, they need to look at the details. I'm not super confident that we're getting through the Senate here. I think there's a lot to be determined. I know that there are also some senators who favor a different approach and hope that they can materially change and pass a different piece of legislation than what the House passed and try to work toward reconciliation there.
And even if it does make it through the Senate, the bill will almost surely be challenged in court. And there's some precedent here. A federal judge in Montana struck down a TikTok ban in the state, citing free speech concerns. A national ban is a different calculus, though.
A federal ban would probably fare somewhat better than state bans, because when states start doing things in the name of national security by themselves, there's a separate and additional set of issues there. But there are a lot of potential landmines here. And you see big civil rights groups, the Knight First Amendment Institute came out against the bill. The ACLU has come out against the bill, right? There are serious groups saying this bill would not pass constitutional muster. And the sort of biggest and most core reason why is the restriction that it would place on a lot of people and a lot of people's speech. There are a number of legal issues here. And certainly the speech issues, but some of the others too, would likely be included in TikTok and ByteDance's challenge to this law.
What's TikTok's response been? I mean, obviously they didn't want the bill to pass. I've seen the argument that if it did pass, it'd be great for tech companies in the U.S. I've seen other tech companies saying like this is bad for tech companies in the U.S. because it's giving the government just too much control over a social media company. What are they saying?
Well, obviously, they don't want the bill to pass, and they really have embraced the First Amendment issue here. They're also saying we make a ton of money in the United States. We're a really important part of the United States economy, and if you shut us down, you'll hurt your own economy.
What of the influencers?
Some people say they would move to YouTube and they would move to Instagram and they would get on with their lives. And so there are other platforms that they would go to, but this would certainly be disruptive to that ecosystem.
So I'm thinking about this bill, and we just had an episode on TBD where we talked about those Florida and Texas laws where they're trying to keep social media companies from moderating political content. Is there something bigger happening here where policymakers are, you know, just trying to simply find any ways possible to control social media platforms these days? Or is this really confined to, you know, a national security thing?
There's definitely an effort to regulate social media more in the U.S., but it's coming from a lot of different places. So far, for the most part, at least at the federal level, lawmakers have not reconciled their very different objectives in a law that would have a lot of teeth. So we're watching them flail around and try, and they may get somewhere. But But laws that restrict social media have strange unintended effects. The other big thing that is going on, though, is that for Americans anyway, the internet has mostly been a borderless place. And we have seen in the last 5-10 years that start to change, right? Even in Europe, with the passage of GDPR, there are now restrictions on where Europeans' data can be stored. Clearly, in China, there's been a giant ratchet. Chinese nationals' data can't leave China the same way anymore. China is much more restrictive over that. And of course, they have a great firewall, right? We've also seen other less democratic countries further restricting what their citizens and nationals can access on the internet. We've never banned a website before, let alone like one of the most popular websites in the country. And if our government bans a website, what other websites can it ban? And what road does that start us down? And how do we think about the sea change that that would represent?
Emily, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. I'm so glad to be here.
Emily Baker White is a technology reporter and senior writer at Forbes. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Anna Phillips, and Patrick Fort. Our show is edited by Paige Osborne. Alicia Montgomery is vice president of audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. TBD is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And if you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. We'll be back Sunday with another episode. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you can catch me over on Slate Money every Saturday. Thanks for listening.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.